It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 22nd day of September 2022. It is the first day of fall, first day of autumn. And this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza. It is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round, and whatever time it is when you are listening to the podcast. Hi, I'm Robin. Thorn in the Side Thursday is here, and we have thorns of sorts, but I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I kind of got to get ahead of myself. I made a terrible mistake yesterday. My talking Barbie. If you push the little button on my talking Barbie, she says, calendars are hard. No, she doesn't, but we'll pretend that she does. I'm not going to be gone tomorrow. I'll be right here for Friday on the front porch, okay? I really, really will, I promise. So, anybody thinking that I'll be here. I'll be right here for the end of the week. Extraordinary, ordinary roundtable conversation that takes place here almost every Friday. Now, the following Thursday and Friday, that's a different story. I will be away because I'm helping out a friend, and I'm happy to do that. You know, I hate being away from the microphone, but then again. I'm right here behind the microphone more often than anybody else who does this kind of work. By a long shot. So, taking a couple of days to go and help a friend. Yeah, I feel pretty good about that. Anyway, that's next week. That's not tomorrow. So, here we are. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So, that means we say thanks to our 22nd day of the month subscribers. And what that means is thank you to Colin. Thank you, Colin, so very much. And thank you to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of the greater San Diego area. Thank you so much, both of you, for being partial sponsors of the program. Remember, we're in a search for more subscribers, because more fall away than stay on. And our pal Zed out in Iowa has a standing offer to double your first month subscription for up to 5 new subscribers at $10 a piece. So maybe think about taking him up on that. But as it stands, the fundraising goal right now, and remember, none of this counts, none of this is counting the times that I wasn't here. But the fundraising goal for today, now, right now, is $1,835. that means that we need to knock out at least 136 to keep it from being a $2,000 fundraising goal tomorrow. Because when we cross that $2,000 line, it just gets scary. Who am I kidding? $1,835 is terrifying. But hopefully we will knock some of that down. You know, over there at PayPal, or I mean, over there at headon.live is the PayPal button. If you want to go via Patreon, well, the link's there under contribute. Let's just see how it all works out. Now, as far as Thorn in the Side Thursday is concerned, I want to start by with a follow up to a story that we've been dealing with for a couple of days. Well, I got back on Tuesday and talked about it that evening. And I'm talking about the interview with Iranian president and the confessed murderer, Ebrahim Raisi. Just as a quick reminder, you may recall that I was disgusted to see Leslie Stahl sitting there with a tea towel on her head so that her filthy female hair would not be an offense unto the nostrils of his most puissant, gracious Iranian presidentialness, you know, the confessed murderer, Ebrahim Raisi. Now, I was of the opinion that the interview took place on American soil, but I may be wrong. Leslie Stahl may have been in Iran. And if she was, I guess it's a little bit more understandable, but still, I guess the scoop was more important than the rights of the women who are facing beatings. 11 people are dead in the latest wave of Iranian unrest. But, you know, far be it from Les to stand shoulder to shoulder with her oppressed sisters in Iran. And I say all this because folks like Irish Dave and our pal Kenda out in Missouri and a few others made it a point to share with me a story of how to get this right. And I'm speaking in particular of Christiane Amanpour, by far a better journalist than Leslie Stahl will ever be, as proven by the fact that that CNN went to great lengths, arranged translators, cameras, a place for the interview to take place in New York, had everything set to go for an interview with this confessed murderer and president of Iran, Ebrahim Raisi. And at the last moment, literally at the last moment, an aide showed up and told Ms. Amanpour that because it was the holy month of Muharram and Safar, I got nothing. I don't know about it. But because, and this was nothing but sheer pathetic pretext. The confessed murderer said that because of the holy months of Muharram and Safar, that he would be requiring that Ms. Amanpour put a tea towel on her head. And Amanpour said, "I politely declined." Raisi was in America now, where the laws about clothing give women the freedom to show things like their ankles and their arms and their legs and their heads, all of which is illegal in Iran. She went on to say, "I pointed out that no previous Iranian president has required this when I have interviewed them outside Iran. The aide made it clear that the interview would not happen if I did not wear a headscarf. He said it was a matter of respect and referred to the situation in Iran," meaning the protests being led by aggrieved women that is taking place all over the country. And she said, "Nope, not going to wear your stupid tea towel." And, you know, from the Department of Say Her Name, Mahsa Amini, who is also known by her Kurdish first name, Jahina, was in Tehran visiting with her family last week, and the Iranian bearded mullah police arrested her and threw her in a van and proceeded to beat her to death. And it has ignited protests all across the country. Now I realize after the fact, and Monday morning quarterback and all of that, but it would have been, I'm sorry, it would have been interesting if Ms. Amanpour had put the stupid tea towel on her head and then the confessed murderer and president of Iran had sat down and they had begun their conversation, and then all of a sudden, with the cameras rolling, she takes it off of her head and Ibrahim Raisi has to stand up and run away. Oh, the horror, the horror. And Ms. Amanpour, who is nothing but class, could have sat there and said, run away, little boy. Run away. Chicken shit. Punk. Thug. But, of course, they're too well-heeled at CNN for any kind of shenanigans like that. Yeah. What's interesting, though, is there was video footage of that self-same Ibrahim Raisi entering the chambers of the United Nations General Assembly, and right close by him was a woman with no tea towel on her head, and he managed to walk past her just fine. Jesus, I hope that bearded old fuck has a prostate the size of a goddamn volleyball. I do. But as to Jahina Amini, a few hours after they arrested her, the morality police, you know, morality police just like Republicans would like to have in the United States of America, right here, right now, and in many ways have spent the past several months establishing as functions of ordinary law enforcement in this country, in places like Texas Stan and Alabama, South Carolina Stan and Louisiana Stan and Mississippi Stan. Law enforcement with a purpose of tormenting others. Yeah. Jahina Amini fell into a coma a few hours after she was beaten in the back of that goddamn van in Tehran. Ali Fatollah Nejad, an Iran expert at the Issam Fares Institute for Public Policy and International Affairs at the American University of Beirut, said, "These are the biggest protests since November 2019. And they make the mullahs terribly, terribly nervous because the Iranian economy is in toilet. And the nuclear accord isn't going anywhere. And the pissed off women of Iran are marching around chanting death to the dictator. And they have a new chant, Zan Zendegi Azadi. Zan Zendegi Azadi. Woman, life, freedom. Among other things coming out of Iran have been images of the protesters either defacing or burning images of the supreme grunting mullah beard Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, of course, Qasem Soleimani, a Revolutionary Guards general, is hailed as something right near as a saint after Nitwit Nero ordered him taken out back in 2020. And the images have gotten out of Iran of protesters setting fire to a giant poster, I guess, of Soleimani. Women refuse to put their stupid headscarves back on in front of the police. They've been burning security forces' cars. I mean, this is a big deal. And at some point in time, since the president of Iran is a hardliner who already confesses to murders, participating and encouraging and ordering murders in, outright, well, back in 2019, security forces killed 321 people, murdered 321 people. That from numbers compiled by Amnesty International. But Leslie Stahl, dear, do feel, absolutely, put on the tea towel and give legitimacy to this gang of punks and thugs. We'll leave it to real journalists like Christian Amanpour to do the real journalism work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a bit of news coming out of the January 6th committee. Virginsurrectionist Thomas Ginny, trad wife to Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas, has agreed to sit down and have a little chit-chat with the January 6th committee. Initially, she had resisted calls to speak with them, saying, well, it's a particularly stressful time. I'll bet. Veronica Escobar, a Democrat from Texas, said she is the reason why, and her meddling, her attempt to overturn the results of the election, were what, and then Clarence Thomas's subsequent ruling, is why I believe Clarence Thomas should step down. I believe he should, too. I believe he should also have a little help via the mechanism that exists in the Constitution of the United States for doing so, namely impeachment. I'm really curious to see what'll happen when she answers questions about all those little text message exchanges that she had with multiple voter registering Mark Meadows, or the pressure campaign she mounted against lawmakers in Arizona and Wisconsin to dummy up the election and try to get a second term illegally for Nitwit Nero. So, hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later. And at some point in time, the pressure will become so awful that Fappy Thomas can no longer abide it. Matt in San Francisco writing, Ginny's stress. Participating in an insurrection can be stressful. Drag her in. Give her no quarter. One leading question after another. Until she confesses. Back to the women of Iran. Flavio says the women in Tehran Amazing. They're burning their hijabs in bonfires across the country. I'm proud of Christiana Amanpour. So am I. I'm waiting to see if the new right-wing suits of CNN will punish her for this, though. But I think, you know, when you put Christiana Amanpour side by side next to, say, Leslie Stahl, you can tell who the giant, the journalistic giant is, and who the journalistic Smeagol is. Now this is interesting. You know that there's been a mobilization of some 300,000 sons of Mother Russia as Putin's war, illegal war against the innocent people of Ukraine, proceeds apace. And apparently, a lot of the sons of Mother Russia are getting on planes, trains, and automobiles and trying to get to the nearest border. According to a report in the New York Times, Russian men are headed for any country that will let them in. One 23-year-old Russian man told the New York Times he flew to Istanbul upon hearing the announcement of the mobilization because he had a friend who said he was willing to house him at least temporarily. I was sitting and thinking about what I could die for, and I didn't see any reason to die for the country. Then there's 37-year-old Alexander, interviewed by the New York Times, and said, "Oh, I started packing my bags before Putin even finished the announcement. I realized that the stakes were just very high. I was already ready for everything, and they would just turn me, and that they would just turn me away at the border." 26-year-old merchant mariner Dmitry, interviewed by the Times, said, "Lots of people want to leave Russia now because they don't want to fight for the opinion of one person." They know. They know. Even in an information-deprived society like Mother Russia, they know. And in an article I saw in the Times of India, and the audio would do us no good unless we've got a bunch of Russian speakers out there, of whom I am not one, there was video of three guys. Oh, the goddess of irony was busy that evening in that square in Moscow. There were three guys who were running their yaps in support of Putin. Barking and grunting at people protesting the mobilization. When out of nowhere come some guys, some official guys, and take two out of three by the arm and conscript them on the spot and lead them off to buses so that they can get all dressed up in the military costume of Mother Russia and be sent to grow sunflowers in Ukraine. It's getting a little warm for Putin. And of course the stories continue to circulate that he's being eaten alive by cancer. It's true. I hope it doesn't hurt too little. And the Ukrainian delegation has been in D.C. asking for, among other things, some tanks and some artillery systems that will fire 200 miles or so. Which is the same artillery system they have now, but the shells that are with it that we've sent them will only go 50 miles. And folks are in the U.S. are worried about the fact that maybe some Ukrainians may be really pissed and want to inflict some similar damage inside the territorial confines of Mother Russia. Draft Dodgers, Lee in New York, says, is Ukraine becoming Russia's Vietnam? Just wondering which nation has the role of Canada. That's probably Poland and Sweden and Finland and anybody that'll let them in. And Flavio adds, going back to Christiane Amanpour, if the right-wing suits even try to retaliate against Christiane Amanpour, the BBC, British Sky, not a Murdoch property anymore, or Al Jazeera will gladly have her. She's got such stature, she writes her own ticket. She does. She absolutely does. And I hope we in this community are not the only ones who are noticing the profound distinction, the profound difference in response between, and the profound difference in courage and bravery and integrity and journalistic ethics between Christiane Amanpour and Leslie Stahl. Oh, and speaking of pressure mounting up, you know, we were talking about it in terms of Nitwit Nero's hero, Pootie. Apparently, it's beginning. How can you tell? But it's getting to. It's getting to Nitwit Nero. In the aftermath of the lawsuit, the $250 million fraud lawsuit that she filed, that Letitia James, Attorney General of New York, filed on Wednesday, yesterday. Nitwit Nero, I guess, posted on Truth Social.
Racist AG Letitia Peekaboo James, the failed gubernatorial candidate, is now running second to strong crime fighter Michael Henry. This could be a big upset because she's been a terrible AG when it comes to protecting the people of New York State. Murder, rape, and drugs are totally out of control. There's never been a more dangerous time than this. She's grossly incompetent. Her staff knows it, and so does everyone else. Make New York safe again for me to come home.
I added the for me to come home part. So there's a well within the margin of error gap between this Michael Henry dude and Letitia James, at least according to a Trafalgar Inside Advantage poll. That was from August 31st to September 1st. On the other hand, Siena College says that Letitia James leads 50 to 36 in a poll that was taken at the end of July. And why peekaboo? Oh, God. Decoding this pathetic old son of a Klansman. Soak. Remember Soak, son of a Klansman? It gets so tiring, but peekaboo is sort of a slant rhyme of a racist slur that I'm sure you know and I know, and it, yeah. Yeah. But he's terribly, terribly upset. And so is his daughter-in-law. One of the few members of the Trump family not to be sued in the fraud papers, namely Laura Trump. Well, yeah, she's married to Eric the Dumber. And I can't really make much sense out of this, but here you go. They invited her onto Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, Fox and Fiends. And She's apparently upset that Letitia James examined money that was shifted from Eric the Dumber's cancer charity to his businesses and said, wait for it, get the hockey puck. My husband started a charity to raise money for kids at St. Jude's Children's Hospital. When he was 22 years old, he raised $30 million for the kids of St. Jude. And Letitia James has such vitriol and hatred for anyone with the last name Trump that she decided to investigate my husband's charity, despite the fact that it had one of the lowest expense ratios of any private charity in America. And unfortunately, guess who was hurt by that? It wasn't my husband. It's the kids of St. Jude's. Who knows how many kids have died unnecessarily thanks to her investigation and her vitriol and hatred for anyone with the last name Trump. Now, remember, the Trump Family Foundation got shut down because of what a grifty organization it was. So, you know, I don't know, discorporate mad about it, Laura. Subject line, Pootie Poot. Suman says, Google searches for how to break arm spike in Russia after Putin's speech. I wonder what the flight bookings are like. What, Steve? Did your microphone just turn to gold? I just thought about it turning to gold. Think harder! Because, well, we know that that COVID Caligula, monster of MAGA Loco isn't okay. That's why we had all of those conversations during his presidency Section 4? Was it? Of the 25th Amendment? Well, I can't think that he did this with the approval of counsel for the parking garage or the lawyer who now looks surprisingly like melanoma, who is definitely not Diana. But he went on the program run by that life support system for a haircut, the Hannity job, where he announced that, I don't know, I guess he's the Kwisatz Derperock. This is... He's not even using the weirding module. Yeah, because in this interview, he explained to the life support system for a haircut that he had the power to declassify documents just by thinking about them. No. Person, man, woman. Camera, TV. Hockey puck. You just might not want to put it away for a while.
I've said on Truth Social a number of times, you did declassify.
I did declassify, yes.
Okay. Is there a process? What was your process to declassify?
It doesn't have to be a process, as I understand it. You know, there's different people say different things, but as I understand it, there doesn't have to be. If you're the president of the United States, you can declassify just by saying it's declassified, even by thinking about it, because you're sending it to Mar-a-Lago or to wherever you're sending it. And there doesn't
have to be
a process. There can be a process, but there doesn't have to be. You're the president. You make that decision. So when you send it, it's declassified. I declassified everything. Now, I declassified things, and we were having a lot of problems with NARA. You know, NARA is a radical left group of people running that thing, and When you send documents over
you there, radical left librarians.
There's a very good chance that a lot of those documents will never be seen again. There's also a lot of speculation because of what they did, the severity of the FBI coming and raiding Mar-a-Lago. Were they looking for the Hillary Clinton emails that were deleted, but they are around someplace? Were they looking for the...
Wait, what? Edith, huh? They thought Nitwit Nero had the missing Hillary Clinton emails from a decade ago, something like that? Holy crap! Good God.
I have the power to declassify them with my mind. You can call me Moi Derp.
Every time you think you've lost the ability to be surprised by any of this stupidity and monumental insanity, nope, he will prove you wrong.
See, I'm right here, right now. I'm touching my temple, and I'm declassifying things. Yes. Ooh-ee-ooh-ooh-ee-ooh-ee-ooh-ah-ah-ting-tang-walla-walla-bing-bang. They're declassified.
Oh, God. And, of course, because he's such a hard-hitting journalist, all the life support system for a haircut can do is sit there and go, oop.
Mar-a-Lago. Were they looking for the Hillary Clinton emails that were deleted, but they are around someplace? Were they looking for the spying
on Trump? You had it, dude.
No, no, they may be saying, they may have thought that it was in there.
They were looking for the strawberries. I knew I had caught them with the strawberries. With machine-like logic and geometric precision, I knew exactly where the strawberries were, but they didn't know about the strawberries.
I know it's deadly serious, but Jesus Christ, and then you think about all the little maggots all across the fruited plain. And they're sitting there. Well, Emery, of course he can declassify things with his mind. He has a very good brain. He told us so. Yeah, exactly, Matt. Matt in San Francisco noting the FBI was looking for Hillary's email, Jimmy Hoffa, Amelia Earhart. I'll add the Lindbergh baby kidnapper and the guy from the grassy knoll. Matt's noting, can we please stop giving this man any kind of airtime? Well, I mean, we can. But this is also a hysterical record. This is the world we live in, Matt. And it's not a particularly sane one, as long as this fucker is allowed to wander around, you know, without a minder or one of those lovely dinner jackets with the sleeves that tie together. That's funny. It's funnier in print than it is to say it. Trump nickname, Lee in New York points out, I saw this one at electoralvote.com, Herr Furor. H-A-I-R-F-U-R-O-R. Herr Furor.
Oh, God. Yes, I know.
Hillary's email, and what else, Lee asks, was NARA looking for Obama's birth certificate at Mar-a-Lago? Oh, there's so many...
Russia, if you're listening...
Well, they're a little bit busy right now out there, Tangerine Tiberius. Pootie's got bigger things to deal with on his... He's losing a war, dude! Never mind. citing Dr. Seuss, Lee points out, maybe he learned it from Dr. Seuss, the title being, I Can Read With My Eyes Shut, by Dr. Seuss. I can
declassify with my eyes shut.
But this is all just, and this is a result of the whacking that the pettifog and brain trust took in front of the 11th Circuit, who told the FBI to get back to investigating. Yeah, you go on. And because, among other things, the counsel for a parking garage, is she involved, said that they may have done it that way. And was thoroughly excoriated for not providing a shred of evidence. But how could they? Regarding the monster of MAGA Loco, no, damn it, Jimmy Kimmel wins the internet for the rest of eternity for his title for that pile of bricks. Henceforth and forever it shall be dubbed, wait for it, Sleazer's Palace. That's beautiful. That is. That's quality. That's what happens when you've got a writing team of like 20 people or something. Geezer disgust us. Geezer, Sleazer's Palace. Sleazer disgust us? Yeah. But yesterday, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals said, declassification argument is a red herring because declassifying an official document would not change its content or render it personal. Oh, I forgot one. Ron and Raleigh says, you forgot about Nick Begich, missing since 1972. True. Who's the guy who jumped out of the aircraft with all the money? Maybe him? Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. That's very caring of you, Brother Bishop Steve. Please keep an eye on the tropics. Before you skedaddle next week, please keep an eye on the tropics. Right now there's a system currently. It's called Disturbance 1. The weather peeps don't know what's going on with this one. The spaghetti tracking models are all over the place. It could dissipate or wind up anywhere from Texas to the East Coast as a major hurricane. What global warming? Indeed. Breaking news on the Queen. She's still dead. Trucking. Got my chips cashed in. Keep trucking. Steve. Yeah. Next week I'm just going north to Pittsburghish. The following week I will be going down Alabama way for my high school reunion. I do keep an eye on all of this. I guess Fiona is going to smack the living daylights out of Bermuda. And I saw one prediction that it could be the worst hurricane ever to hit Canudlia, the east coast of Canudlia. A slight disturbance in the force within the Horn Family Community Congregation. Subject line, airtime. Steve in New York saying, Matt, I love you more than my luggage. However, I think we need to give this fucker all the airtime he desires. As I heard someone say, Trump's worst enemy is himself. Keep talking. Yeah. I understand both points. Steve wondering, I wonder if Amelia Earhart was there. I know. Or the lost crown prince of the Romanovs. Yeah. Yes, thank you, Ron and Raleigh, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. That would be D.B. Cooper. Yes, D.B. Cooper. Him too. I guess and in conjunction with the 11th Circuit's ruling, suddenly Judge Aileen Cannon, otherwise known as Trump's rubber stamp, had a fit of reconsideration. She amended her previous order, saying that the seized material subject to a special master review no longer includes the approximately 100 documents bearing classification markings. She's trying desperately to dodge out of the hole she dug herself. Lee in New York pointing out, the queen is still dead. But what about the spider? Lee. But the 11th Circuit panel, the three-judge panel, really did sort of burn him to the ground. They said, he has not even attempted to show that he has a need to know the information contained in the classified documents, nor has he established that the current administration has waived that requirement for these documents. So, this three-judge panel having ruled, I'm sure that the next move on behalf of the Pettifog and Brames Trust, will be to request a hearing en banc, namely the full panel of the 11th Circuit, all hearing the case instead of just three. And after that, off to Washington, D.C. they go for a little chit-chat with our most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties. They're making a mockery of any idea of us being a nation of laws and not of persons. But even as they are being... yes, please, Steve. Yes. I'd like to read that. Even as they're being busted for fraud, the Trump Organization has called in a marker on, of all people, Kris Jenner, so-called matriarch of the grifty Kardashian family, the people who are famous for being famous. I had no idea, but apparently Kris Jenner and the Kardashian empire have space rented in, of all places, that hillbilly high-rise in Manhattan known as Trump Tower. And apparently Kris Jenner used to run something similar to Trump University. God, birds of a feather. The Trump Organization... from a report by the Daily Beast, the Trump Organization alleges the Legacy Business School, a for-profit diploma mill that was formerly proudly chaired by Kris Jenner, hasn't paid rent since late last year. Legacy's lease was canceled in July, according to the Trump Organization's complaint, and they're still out there suing folks. Although it's unclear if the school is still in operation on the tower's 19th floor. The suit asks the court to get a sheriff or a New York City marshal to evict the troublesome tenant. And they're trying to also collect from Mark Fisher Footwear. They used to be the manufacturer of Precious Princess Iwanka My Daddy Trump Kushner's shoe brand, which last I checked was for sale in places like Shoe Show and Payless, and for steeply marked down prices. But it's almost as though this Legacy outfit, Legacy Business School, was modeled on Trump University. They opened their doors to ostensibly teach business in Trump Tower in 2016. Made a big deal out of where they were located. They charged $105,000 in tuition with a promise of an exclusive dinner with Kris Jenner to the first 100 students. That same year, the school CEO, Alessandro Nomellini, came under scrutiny after the Daily Beast reported the school was actually a rebranded affiliate of the European School of Economics, which has been sued time after time after time in the United States for, well, being a deadbeat. That story came out, and suddenly Kris Jenner said, "What? Oh, no, I'm too busy to do this. I'm unable to commit the necessary time and support of the school, and therefore I am no longer involved. I hear my social media calling and falling." Meanwhile, the Trump organization. No, really, we need $1 million, please. Seriously. God, we need all of it. We're brokering the Ten Commandments and poor as Job's turkey. And it's apparently a bad day, or been a bad day, recently for Clanny Oakley. You know, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert. Local media have been having a time with her. She was supposed to debate. Clanny Oakley was.
Talking. Yeah, I think when you look at it, you know, you shouldn't have moderators that are supporting former people that ran against her. I think it's really easy for Club 20 to get somebody who's more impartial, and I don't think she knew that going into it, and so that's why it was brought up at that time. I think, you know, this is, Lauren Boebert's always going to get a lot of clicks, a lot of interest from both sides of the aisle. The question is she in any danger of losing her seat? And she is not in any danger of losing her seat. The interesting thing about House races is always they're up every 2 years, right? So you get that progress report 2 years in. Are people happy with what you're doing or not? And I think they're going to overwhelmingly send Lauren Boebert back to the U.S. House.
Andy, do you think it's going to make a difference?
Unfortunately, I don't. But literally the only argument Michael has is that, you know, we should have better moderators. She is a joke. This whole reality that she's mocking her congressional seat, she's a United States congresswoman, and to act like that is an embarrassment to Colorado, it's an embarrassment to the third CD, and it's an embarrassment to the country. She's a joke. Marjorie Taylor Greene's a joke. Both should be voted out. I don't think, unfortunately, the Boebert's going to be voted out this time, but the only response Republicans have is we should look at the moderator. I mean, give me a break. You got to look at the actual person who's in the job doing the work. He has no defense for Lauren Boebert. She's a clown.
When you look at this race, you heard
pretty straightforward, not to mention pretty, well, accurate. But the sad fact of the matter is that district, even after redistricting, still has a whole bunch of crazy in it, just like the district that marginal Trailer Queen is in. They're gonna be back, and they're gonna keep barking and grunting along. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere in the depths of the punditosphere, there isn't a certain reality at work that, well, I mean, she's entered Louis Asparagus Gohmert territory long since. And the crazier she talks, the more that Democrats can fundraise on her. It's just such a weird damn dynamic. And it feels a little bit like, well, this way to the egress. But as we approach the end of the first hour of the program, and we are still at a goose egg, by the way, as we try to keep this little thing on the air. An Alex Jones update. Alex Jones. You know, yesterday's program, we had a clip of him losing his mind in front of the microphones outside of the courthouse there in, what is it, Darien? And inside in the trial, it's not a hell of a lot much more sane. And today there was some Alex Jones got on the stand and Chris Mattei, lawyer for the Sandy Hook families, went into a line of questioning in which he at least attempted to ask Alex Jones whether it was wrong to lie about him, the Sandy Hook families, in public. And somehow or another, things that Alex Jones said about the Young Turks program entered the record. Mattei asked him about his allegations against, the Young Turks, and their report that Jones had sent sexually explicit images of children to the Sandy Hook families. And Alex Jones then blamed it on his lawyers. I don't fully understand how this comes in, but eventually the lawyers started barking at each other, at which point his lawyer, Norman Pattis, started talking over the Sandy Hook lawyer, and it's been going on throughout the trial. And it even got to the point where he was over-talking Judge Bellis. Who didn't take any too kindly to it. And then called the lawyers to the bench for a sidebar. And Judge Bellis said, "I can count on one hand how many times I've argued in court before a jury in my entire career." And then went on and said, "When I tell you to stop, you need to stop on a dime." To which Pattis, again, not understanding the first law of holes, said, "Oh, you're right. Here's the deal, Judge. I'm an advocate. I get caught in the moment, and you admonish me, and I'm working on it." And she's been taking him down time after time after time. In the New York Times article, and remember, Darlene told us all about Norm Pattis. There, with a little ponytail. New York Times reporting, "One factor in these repeated disputes during testimony is the fact that Jones is unaccustomed to any public forum that he does not control. On his show, he interrupts his guests. In his courthouse press conferences, he shouts down those who disagree with him. Trial testimony has for years proven a challenge for him." That's such simple way to describe it.
Right, but that's different. Attorney Pattis. How many times do I have to say when I'm speaking, you stop? You have been a member of the bar for a long, long time, and you know the rules in all the courts. So, your objection was that it was a motion in limine issue, I thought, that it would require him to lie. I now hear that it's a different objection, that it's speculative, he's not an expert.
I'm waiting to finish so I don't learn to follow your order right back. And I have been off the record for a long time. As you know, I insist on making my record, so thank you. And I'm sorry that I stepped on your question. I thought I wasn't done. What I was trying to say was the following. I objected because he's trying to get an evocation in the jury's presence, which is entirely wrong, without permission of the court. I objected further because he was asking Mr. Jones a question that places him on the horns of a dilemma. In the course of all of his proffer outside the jury's presence, he's now switched it to one would expect. That is simply not relevant. That's argumentative. He's a fact witness. His state of mind about his conduct is...
I can't disagree with that. So I will sustain the objection. Where does that leave us with respect to possible future invocation?
If there's going to be an invocation, I've requested it. If prelude to it be outside the jury's presence so that I can argue about whether the plaintiffs are entitled.
All right, so how does that work procedurally? There's a question. You're going to invoke on his behalf?
I can't do that, I don't think. I'm assuming the jury's presence. I'll argue. I'll simply say motion about invocation.
Okay. Does that work, Attorney Maddie?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay. So if that happens, Mr. Jones, if that happens, just take a break. Okay. So yes. Okay, let's bring the jury out.
By the way, Alex is purple again.
So can I just see counsel in the meantime?
Sidebar.
So I can count on
Judge, here's the deal. I'm an advocate. I get lost in the moment. You've admonished me, and I'm working on it.
You're standing up for your objections, though. Right?
I'm a member of Advocates Anonymous, Judge. If I warm too much to my client's cause, that's why courts are here to ensure fair trials.
Oh, for pity's sakes. And a member of Advocates Anonymous? So he's making a mockery of addiction now. This guy really is a prick. Again, we come back to it. Gee, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to Steve and Georgia Stan, Miss Karen, Little Cletus. Thank you for getting us started. No goose egg now. So we're down to 1825. Thank you. And I'm looking, Steve, I'm looking forward to being there for Friday on the front porch. I love Fridays, especially when the conversation gets really vigorous and animated. I really do. I love it. And so we are at the top of the hour, and it would seem a decent time to, this being a Thursday and all, to check in with Brad and Desi and the Green News Report. In the meantime, if you'd like to engage in some conversation, you are heartily invited so to do. Jump right in. The conversation is fine. The Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, or then there's the actual phone number that ties to the Skype line. That's 304-574-8178. And then the Stress Line, named in honor of Bill Mr. Stress Miller, gone but not forgotten, and a really perfect name for that phone line. And that is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, and it'll get you right into the program, and we'll see what you want to talk about. Because the heart and soul of this program is conversation. It's not this is not designed to be hours upon hours upon hours of filler-obstering. It's meant to be conversation in which we find out things in those conversations that might not have come to light with me just sitting here talking by myself. So jump in if you want. In the meantime, Brad and Desi.
It's Tuesday, September 2022.
We're reaping what we've sown. We're now experiencing devastating climate impacts.
Three simultaneous major storms underscore climate crisis impacts. Climate change juiced Pakistan's catastrophic flooding, study finds. Plus,
this is my ancestors' land, and I feel like I shouldn't have to leave.
Court blocks massive proposed plastics plant in Louisiana.
All those blockages and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Yeah, you know, the worst thing that can happen to you as a climate scientist is that your predictions come true.
Yeah, you know, that's also the worst thing that can happen to you as a political news person on the radio. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I know the Queen of England died a couple of weeks ago, so that's kept the news media busy. But as it turns out, there were three huge storms over one single weekend.
And a lot more than that over this past summer. As we go to air, it's Climate Week in New York City, the annual Climate Solutions Conference coinciding with the United Nations General Assembly. Both events arrive after a summer of extreme weather disasters around the world. Pakistan is still reeling from one of the worst climate disasters in history. The World Health Organization warns of a second disaster. Waterborne and mosquito-borne diseases are surging after unprecedented rains inundated a third of the nation, killing more than 1,500 people, and there is not enough medicine to treat millions of displaced people living in crowded camps. This week, climate experts at the World Weather Attribution Initiative reported that climate change supercharged the intensity of Pakistan's record rainfall by as much as 50%. And the month-long extreme heat wave that preceded the rain was made 30 times more likely. This past weekend, three powerful storms hit simultaneously around the world, underscoring the rising costs of inaction on climate change. Hurricane Fiona ripped across Puerto Rico as a Category 1 storm, causing a territory-wide blackout on its fragile electric grid. Some areas received as much as 30 inches of rain, triggering astonishing flooding. As we go to air, one death has been confirmed, thousands rescued from the floods. President Biden has issued a state of emergency to free up federal disaster funds.
I hope he's ready to throw them some paper towels.
And FEMA says it learned from monster Hurricane Maria, which devastated the island 5 years ago this week. This time, FEMA pre-staged emergency personnel and supplies. Also on Sunday, Typhoon Nanmadol slammed Japan, unleashing torrential flooding in mountain areas. More than 9 million people were told to evacuate. The storm is expected to cause billions in damages. In Alaska, the zombie remnants of Typhoon Merbok hit western Alaska as the most intense storm in 50 years, causing dangerous storm surge flooding over more than 1,000 miles of Alaska's low-lying coastline, destroying bridges, roads, and coastal defenses.
All within
That's weird. That sounds like a repeat. Yeah, you're right, Darlene. I don't know what's I don't know what's going on with that. Yeah, well. Fun with radio. Brand new file, downloaded it, reloaded it. Everything. I got nothing. Strange. Now I'm just eating up with curiosity. I just want to see, bear with me. Now I have to find out.
It's Tuesday.
Yeah, no, it's not, Brad. It's really not. Hey. right. Damn it. Okay. Well, we have entered the second hour of the program. Thank you, Matt in San Francisco. Thank you so much. Call it the Help a Gal Pay Your Bills Challenge. There's $100 on the table. Thank you, Matt. And if it's met, well, Matt will double, you know, your 5 becomes 10, et cetera. 20 becomes 40, up to $100. And I can't thank you enough, because it seems to just be getting harder and harder and harder to keep all of this going. And by the way, Arnold says, of Nitwit Nero, I'm starting to really believe the diaper stories. Well, it's kind of hard not to. All right, back into the swamp. What else? Plenty. It's funny. It's funny how sensitive. Yeah, too sensitive. The right wing can get. Now apparently, the latest victim in the Trump Olympics is none other than Nimrata Haley, who was queried, and now the. Now the Republicans are having a purple polka-dotted blue scream and hissy over the fact that, well, Sonny Hostin, after years of us pointing out that, you know, Nimrata's name is Nimrata, and it's nothing to be ashamed of, it's perfectly good. A South Asian name, for God's sakes. Kind of wondered why she didn't use it there in South Carolina, Stan, and actually nobody was wondering at all. No. Sonny Hostin said, she said, you know, she's gone by Nikki since she was a child, and as an Indian woman growing up in South Carolina at that time, so she could avoid prejudice. That was from View co-host Elisa Farah Griffin, who I guess is the new Republican on the show. But Sonny Hostin said, well, you know, there are some of us that can be chameleons and decide not to embrace our ethnicity so that we can pass. Because that's what Nimrata has always been about, you know, trying to keep people from noticing that. And you know what? If I was Nimrata Haley, I would too, because you have to remember what happened to John McCain in 2000 in South Carolina when the robocalls went out. From the George W. Bush campaign, hey, did y'all know that John McCain has one of them babies? Yeah. So you can see why Nimrata would want to be a chameleon. And they gave Sonny Hostin some grief because she goes by Sonny instead of her given name, because, as she has explained, her given name is Asuncion. And she has said in the past that, well, she doesn't go by Asuncion because a lot of Americans couldn't even pronounce it for lack of education. But now, Nimrata has pogo-sticked up onto the cross, claiming that she is being discriminated against, and that she is a victim of racism. You know, God bless America. She's a delicate and dainty little snowflake, isn't she? Nobody out there talking about Joe Wilson, whose name isn't Joe, or hey, how about the Senate Minority Leader, Addison McConnell? Well, that's probably too close to Addison McConnell, and an adder is a viper, is a serpent, is a poisonous snake. you know, we tend to think of him as a turtle, but no, I can see that. And by the way, now Tim Scott has also gotten into the act, appearing on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda to decry the fact that Sonny Hostin pointed out that Haley's first name is Nimrata. Sonny's not ashamed of being Asuncion. He just knows that America probably can't pronounce it. Because America, greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, and forever in the universe under God, amen. But Tim Scott, who yesterday introduced a bill to blatantly discriminate against an entire class of American children, is suddenly worried about the ethnic slurring of Nimrata Haley. Barking and grunting. I can't imagine that in America today that Sonny's having a conversation about Nikki Haley's name. Let's have a conversation about how good of a governor she was. Not much. Let's have a conversation about how all South Carolinians, especially minorities in our state, saw their opportunities go up, not down under her leadership. Not true. And you know what he didn't mention? Let's talk about the time when Nimrata was bamboozled by the morning zoo crew of Moscow 98.7 into thinking she was talking to the president of Poland about an imaginary island nation called Bonomo. And the conversation went on and on and on, and she never caught on to it. Somehow that didn't make Tim Scott's list. Oh, my God. So we've got that. And we've also got some more news out of South Carolina, Stan. And this one's going to be crushing. Oh, thank you, Matt. Matt said, if the $100 is met, I'll throw another $100 on the table. So that's not double your money. That's triple your money. And that would actually fund an entire broadcast day from like 2 weeks ago, which is amazing. Or, yeah, well, last week. Let's see. Yeah, this would finish funding for last Monday. Thank you, Matt. Thank you. So please don't let Matt's generous and kind offer go by the boards. So now we go to Spartanburg, South Carolina. Oh God. And there's no humor to be had out of this story. But well, there was an outbreak of freedom in South Carolina, Stan, yesterday. This just makes my stomach turn. Somewhere down in South Carolina, Stan, somewhere around the greater Spartanburg Prosperity Complex sphere zone, on South Pine Street, a call went out to the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Department. The call was as to a shooting. 33-year-old Cora Lynn Bush of Spartanburg had been shot. She was transported to the hospital and later died. 33-year-old Cora Lynn Bush, back when she was 30, had given birth to a precious little baby girl. And, you know, because the National Rifle Association has convinced everybody that you're not even safe in your own home unless you're strapping heat. Well, there was a gun with a hot one in the chamber. And the 3-year-old found it. and with no intent whatsoever, blew her mama away. The three people in the house at the time were 33-year-old Miss Bush, the 3-year-old, and the grandma. In a Facebook post about the event, the deputies said,
The grandmother was interviewed, and her account of the incident corroborated with both the evidence and at the scene and the injury to the victim. Although our investigation remains active, all indications are this incident was a result of the young child gaining access to an unsecured firearm, which resulted in the mother being accidentally shot and later passing away at the hospital. Freedom ain't free. I added that part. God, these stories just make me sick.
Happened about 7:45 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time yesterday. On the same Facebook post, they said, please keep the family of Ms. Bush in your thoughts and prayers during this time of loss and grief.
Gotta wonder who it was that was so terrified of even being in their own home that they felt the need to keep a pistol with one hot in the pipe in a house with a toddler. Jesus Christ.
There will, of course, be no charge. Well, I don't know. It's South Carolina, Stan. They may charge the 3-year-old and have her tried as an adult. You can never make any firm assertions about anything regarding civility or common decency in a place like South Carolina, Stan. Bang! But of course, this is the policy that people like Tim Scott and Lindsey Graham, more on Lindsey in a minute, want for America. Because little 3-year-olds who will eventually grow up and find out that what happened to Mama was that they blew Mama away when they were 3 years old. That's the America that the Republican Party wants, y'all. Endless guns for endless paranoia for endless freedom. Bang. Now I just feel like I've got something like a knot in my gut thinking about this. Now, I know nothing about Spartanburg, South Carolina. I know nothing about South Pine Street. I know nothing about whether or not it's a dangerous neighborhood or a quiet and bucolic little scene. But Jesus, 3 years old, and no mama. I guess grandma'll raise her. Maybe grandma'll raise her as her own and never say anything about mama. But the odds are pretty good that eventually that 3-year-old baby will find out that on the morning of the last day of summer, 2022, she put a bullet through her own mother. And then what? Then what? How much counseling does that kind of trauma require? My God, if you were grandma, what would you think? Because 3-year-olds ask questions and they say things like, "Where's mama?" Having had some experience
with three-year-olds, I know. Where's Mama? Where's Mama? Baby, Mama's not coming home, but Mama's with the angels now. Well, I need Wayne the Peter over at the NRA to explain to me whether this three-year-old was a good guy with a gun or a bad guy with a gun. I wish ghosts were real. I do. I'd like for every victim of the gun violence that the National Rifle Association has advocated over the course of the last generation. I would like them all standing there behind Wayne the Peter every morning as he looks in the mirror and attempts to shave. Of course, if that were the case, he'd probably have a beard down to his toenails. Because he could never look in a mirror again. Oh, well, that's what the conservative family values of the conservative party in South Carolina wants with all of their hearts. Oh. And I don't know why we live in a country that wants the curses to fall upon the heads of three-year-olds. Three-year-olds. I wonder what the intellectual process was that led to having that firearm in the home. I wonder what the paranoia was like. Well, no, Mama, we'll just put it where she can't get to it. First rule of toddlers. Toddlers can get to everything. Nah, forget it, Robin. It's South Carolina, Stan. Wow, Roger, thank you. Thank you so much. Roger just answered Matt's challenge in full. Thank you. So we're going to go down to $15.25. Thank you. And thank you to Cynthia in the Bay Area. We'll go down to 1500 now. Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you, sister. I appreciate it. We all do. Ron in Raleigh says, have you noticed black folks can no longer be the victims of racism? Only white folks can lay claim to being the victims of racism. The perpetrators of the racism are black people. We're in the upside-down world. Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of hard-pressed to figure out how Nimrata is a victim in all of this. As to the shooting in Spartanburg, Ron and Raleigh says what happened was that three-year-old was just standing her ground. I'm sorry, but it's South Carolina. I know, and you can fill in the blank with any other Confederate benighted, poorly ill-educated state. I'm sorry, Robin, but it's Alabama. I'm sorry, Robin, but it's West Virginia. I'm sorry, Robin, but it's North Carolina. I'm sorry, Robin, but it's Tennessee. I'm sorry, Robin, but it's Arkansas. I'm sorry, Robin, but it's Kentucky. I'm sorry, Robin, but it's Indiana. Sorry, Robin, but it's Mississippi. You know the drill. And somehow, though, God. Thank you, Lady B. Thank you. I'm not sure I'm clear on what you're saying there, Jeremy, so I'll wait till you clarify. Unsecured gun. Unsecured gun. Yeah. Damn. And I guess there's nothing to be done. Nobody there to get charged. Well, I don't. I mean, maybe, you know, if it turns out that grandma, that maybe they were living with grandma and grandma's the one who didn't see. No,
this family's dealt with enough.
Amen. Amen, Cynthia. Cynthia just said, just remembering here that every time I donate to the show, a girl out there somewhere gets her heels. Yes, she does. I don't do heels. I'm kind of tall as it is. Thank you, Cynthia. Let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. There's still a horse gagging. Oh, no, before I go to the stress line, got to do this one. Do you remember, what was it, last week when we had the story of the sting down in Polk County, Florida? Well, yesterday there was another word of another sting, this one in Texas. According to Click2 Houston, a police chief from Texas was arrested and charged yesterday after he too got nabbed by probably some corpulent dude sitting behind a computer terminal and, yeah, baby, I'm so hot for you. Oh, yeah, Chief Deputy Brian Harris of the Harris County Precinct 5 Constable's Office was charged with soliciting prostitution, is currently in the Montgomery County Jail. Montgomery County Sheriff's Office said, we are sending a message that we are not going to tolerate this activity in our community. We will arrest and charge those engaged in this here illicit act. We will also continue to identify those who have been forced into trafficking by rescuing them from their situations and connecting them with services to help with their recovery. Oh, dear God. They're going to round up the sex workers and turn them over to some gospel shop. Meanwhile, Chief Deputy Brian Harris, according to his LinkedIn page, says he's a veteran homicide detective for the Houston Police Department before he retired. The statement then said, Chief Brian Harris has been relieved of duty. We hold our deputies to the highest standard. His termination is effective immediately. Wonder how many hookers he's rousted. Yeah? Yeah? Think about it. To protect and to serve, y'all! And then there's the detectives in the Buckeye State. Oh, God. From South Carolina to Ohio. Sorry, Nikki. Hocking County, Ohio, where sheriff's deputies were investigating a sexual assault, got a search warrant and served it on a home, and found things that they wished they had never seen. They found a three-year-old, again with a three-year-old, inside a filthy cage filled with bugs. Sorry. The child had been locked up using zip ties. A two-year-old was also found walking around inside the home holding a meth pipe. Franklin T.J. Varney and Megan Smith ran from the house because they were also involved with the sexual assault investigation. And officers went ahead and arrested Ella Webb as well because she's the children's grandmother and had legal custody. the children have been placed in the Ohio foster care system. And I guess TJ and Megan are still on the lam. Hocking County Sheriff's Office Deputy Caleb J. Moritz said, "I very, very strongly encourage Mr. Varney and Ms. Smith to immediately surrender themselves to law enforcement. If they chose to run from their responsibilities as they did tonight, the Hocking County Sheriff's Office will tirelessly leverage every local, state, and federal resource available to bring these two to justice." Jesus Christ. A cage? A cage? And a two-year-old walking around with a meth pipe. Well, Franklin TJ, well, I'm kind of guessing here. I'm making judgments. I'm being judgy. But he's got a script tattoo around the base of his neck that says sinful, and something on the side of his face, can't be sure what. Megan, sort of a dishwater blonde, and grandma, Ella, well, she just kind of looks like a ordinary, average, everyday, well, what? Romeo and Juliet, this ain't. What a country. Two-year-old with a meth pipe. Well, at least the two and the three-year-old didn't have a 9mm pistol with a round hot in the chamber. I don't know if I could do two of those stories in one night without crying. No. Okay, now let's go over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Robin, I have to take exception on behalf of a client of my firm.
Yes?
Nimrata Haley, if you will notice, jumped up on a proper number 7 and was attached properly by professional crucifixion specialist.
Okay.
So I think we should cut her a little slack here, Robin. She did it the right way. Unlike, let's say, any other right-wing gospel sharp or idiot Republican politician. She did it the right way. She came to the professional. We gave her the full package, but she refused to be buried as per the contract. So we're not responsible for any infections that might occur.
Oh, no, the waiver language is there. She would be stopped from making any such claim.
Right. Now, as for Alex Jones, I believe there was a news report that he had supposedly reported that he had received child pornography, but it had been reported to them that he had sent said images. And I think that's what the lawyer was questioning him about. Jones's claim was that somebody sent it to him unsolicited. Now, I find it rather convenient that they can call on the FBI for one thing, and I wouldn't blame them, frankly, if they had. But Then on the other, they want to dismantle the FBI, probably so they can send out images whenever they want. But I think old Alex may end up being broke by the time all these cases get done. Because while he's fundraising to beat the band, if I know the lawyers, they're going to be digging through him for years to get every dime they can grab out of him, and they should. It's the only place it hurts on a Republican is in the wallet.
Yeah, they can hear only through their buttocks.
No. I'm rather enjoying myself about a certain wrestling superstar that got slapped down in federal court yesterday. Or maybe it was earlier today. I'm not sure which. But two judges that he appointed agreed with one that wasn't appointed by him unanimously that the DOJ could use the classified information they'd seized at Mar-a-Lago. And they kind of smacked the Judge Cannon around a bit, too. So I've been enjoying my little moment of schadenfreude.
But as well you should.
The thing is, I told the boys down at the shop that we'd better ramp up production, because I have a feeling after Nimrata starts talking about how good we crucified her, that, you know, some of her colleagues and former colleagues might want to avail themselves of our glorious services. And I'm just going to have to remind them that they have to deal with the sextons down at the yard to fulfill the contract. No skipping out on that. I mean, if you're gonna follow in the steps of Jesus, you got to get planted. Just like Queen Elizabeth, she got planted.
And none of this human composting either, because the bishops don't like it.
No. Well, you know, it's interesting you should mention that. The common form of burial in Britain now is cremation. Because they're running out of space. But not for somebody like Queen Elizabeth, no. She gets to stretch out for eternity in a vault. I made a mistake. She is buried at Windsor Chapel with her mother, father, sister, and husband. So, but yeah, the Royal Gardeners were working overtime this week to get everything ready. It's not often you plant a queen.
True, that doesn't just happen every day.
This sad story you told about the youngster, the toddler that shot her mama, something similar happened to a friend of mine. Son, when he was 8, he got up in the closet and found his dad's pistol.
Oh, Jesus.
And unfortunately, my friend did not have a trigger lock on it. He figured, well, it's up in the closet. Nobody will bother it up there. But kids being kids, and I knew this kid when he was 3, he was always a curious boy. always getting into stuff. So it didn't surprise me. And he pulled it down off the shelf and he thought it wasn't loaded. And he went to looking at it and he touched the trigger in the wrong way and it went off. And he lived through it, but his parents had to look to brain injury specialists to help him survive. And it was fortunate for them that I lived down the street from a printing shop where the owners worked with an organization that dealt with brain injury. So I went to them and I asked them if they knew of anybody up in Alaska they could go to. Unfortunately, they didn't. But yeah, I remember when I lived in Alaska, Tony, that's the boy's name, we went to Denali National Park and we were camping and it was nighttime and he wanted to go out and see the bears. And we said, no, you got to go to sleep first. We'll see the bears in the morning. And he insisted absolutely that he wanted to go out and see the bears. And it took us an hour to get him to go to sleep. To say the least, he saw all the bears he wanted to see in the morning. But, you know, patience was not this child's virtue. But, yeah, I understand that kind of story just irritates the hell out of me because we've got more guns than people in this country. And for what? I mean, there are over 3 guns for every man, woman, and child in this country. Now, I could see holding 1 firearm or maybe 2 if you wanted to act all tough. But why would you need 3?
Because
these firearms fondlers are just, I don't know, there's something not quite right about these people.
Well, I was coming north toward home through Tennistan, Dave, and I saw a big old billboard as I approached Nash Vegas, and it showed an AR-15 and it was something the area's biggest collection of whatever, and you know, next exit, and there's just a mindset thing going on here, and I can't, maybe it's because I'm old or a girl or something, I don't know, but I just can't get in touch with this notion of my home needs to be an armed camp. I mean, maybe it's those 35 to 50 feral hogs that dude was talking about on Twitter a few years ago, and Jason Isbell took him down a notch. Help me. I mean, you're in Talibandiana, but frankly, the differences between Talibandiana and Talibama now are pretty much a matter of just an accent and y'all being better at basketball and Alabama being better at football. But what is it about an assault rifle that just makes for a happier home?
Well, it all has to do with the not being seen as some sissy liberal. You know, their masculinity is all wrapped up in it. I mean, I think I told the story about the 4th of July when my brother came to pick Christine and I up. tickets to Muncie. He admitted that he was involuntarily celibate, and I have a cure for that. But he is a mentally ill man who's got pistols and rifles and God knows what else, and unfortunately he has the training to use it. I mean, he's a retired Army officer, and he knows how to use them. Now, frankly, he's less dangerous than the half-trained idiot to get out there on a Thursday afternoon drinking half a case of the malted soda pop and, you know, shooting off their freedom protectors and anything that doesn't move. And, or maybe it does if they get drunk enough, you know, they see two of everything, so they've got a target-rich environment.
That's a hell of a term, target-rich environment.
The cure for these people, unfortunately, is, you know, not available. And even if they wanted it, they'd be like anti-vaxxers. You're stepping on my freedom to be an idiot. It wasn't that long ago that Whit Nero was in my part of the country. And unfortunately, I got a call down at the shop from the Secret Service. They wanted a break. They said they couldn't handle it anymore.
All right.
They wondered if I would mind watching a former president for a few hours while they went and got some lunch and unwound a little bit. And I said, well, sure, but they didn't bring me the cool ex-president, you know. No Jimmy Carter.
No, no, no.
No Bill Clinton. Not even Dim Reader. I mean, I used to paint with oil paint. We'd have had something to talk about.
Well, he said to enjoy it. Well, I mean, it's hard to tell, but you know, everybody wanted to have a beer with him. Remember?
Well, I'm one of those people that can only drink like one beer, and then that's way too much.
And then you're swinging. You're on the chandelier, and it's all over.
Yes. Don't ask me what I did the night before. You know, that kind of thing. No. Oof. No, they brought the Depends and the diaper bag and the Fisher Price red phone that they told him that he could get a hold of Vladimir.
Did they bring him the little push along popcorn popper?
No.
Yeah, it's got the little dome and the
No, because that's more like mowing lawns. Whoa. He hires people to do that.
I knew you were going to go there.
See, the thing is, I kind of pissed him off. To avoid any...
You don't want a pissed off toddler president.
Well, here's the thing, Robin. As president of the North American Assholes Association, I did not want there to be any confusion when people addressed either of us. So I made him refer to me as Mr. President, just so there was no confusion. I mean,
well, you're a president now, aren't you?
Right. Yes. And it'd be kind of weird, Mr. President. It would just get too damn confusing. And since he has the And I apologize to any two-year-olds out there. He has the brain of a two-year-old. Any actual two-year-olds, I apologize for insulting you by comparing you to the 44th man to serve as president of the United States. Everybody seems to forget Grover Cleveland, and I don't understand it. But he's a difficult child to deal with. I almost feel sorry for his mama. If it wasn't for those damn cat's ass lips that she left him. Did she have an affair with Mussolini back in the day? That's what I'm beginning to wonder. Because he likes to stick his skin out there. I'm beginning to wonder, Robin. You know, they say he got around. Maybe he got a hold of the Scottish tourists while he was, you know, in Rome. But I don't know. But, you know, that Fisher Price phone was so cute. They had the little bobble eyes on it that went up and down.
Oh, yeah.
And it went with him wherever he went. And Ketchlin, oh my God. When I told him we were out of ketchup, he damn near had a heart attack right there. I'm like, well, I don't eat ketchup. What? You don't eat ketchup? What's the matter with you? I mean, like, he was just, and you know what? I upped my fee. I called the Secret Service right back, and I told them that they said, "Well, I said, well, I know I volunteered for this. We're gonna have to renegotiate this." And they said, "Okay, what do you want?" I said, 445th of Crown Royal." And they go, "Well, that's a Canadian whiskey." I said, "Yeah, but he started a trade war that boosted the price on Canadian whiskey, and I want him to reimburse me for all that." And since he wanted to drink the fifth 440 times in that deposition, well, then y'all can hand me the 445th as payment for putting up with him for 2 hours. You know, so... But to say the least, they came and got him, got the diaper bag and everything else, and he was just the most hateful little thing you ever wanted to see in your life, Robin.
Just a walking tantrum.
Yes. I can now understand why he's been divorced twice. And the smartest one was the first one to divorce him. But I don't know. It seems like we've seen this scenario before. Back in Elizabeth the First day, her favorite, Robert Dudley's wife, she ended up at the top of the stairs and then ended up at the bottom of it dying under mysterious circumstances. I don't know. I'm not saying there's anything untoward, but it smelled awful fishy to me.
I'm just trying to figure out the coffee that didn't spill at the bottom of the stairs.
Well, that's,
I mean, granted, this isn't, you know, this isn't building, you know, the what about building whatever number it was on 9/11, but really, I mean,
yeah. Yeah, and why, if she was cremated, why put the remains in a casket?
Well, we sorted that one out. By burying the remains in a casket, it becomes a family burial ground, which makes it harder, I guess, under New Jersey law to take the property away from Nitwit Nero.
Well, then if he wanted to hide, or if he wanted to... to do that, he should have buried her in Scotland. I mean, he's got a golf course up there. He should have buried her in Scotland because they have the right of, the dead have what's called the right of sepulcher there. Once you're planted, they don't generally exhume bodies unless there's a criminal investigation. It's real hard in Scott to get an exhumation order from a Scottish court.
No, Jesus.
And it's been that way for years, since like the Middle Ages. The conspiracy theorist that wrote about Roswell Chapel,
Roslyn? Is it Roslyn?
Roslyn Chapel, yeah. But they mentioned
Wasn't that Graham Hancock or something like that? Wasn't that one of his things?
I don't know. Hell, they all blur together, you know.
I mean, I read all of those Graham Hancock doorstops back in the 90s, knowing that it was all bullshit, but at the same time enjoying a really good yarn.
Well, my favorite was, what was it? Holy Grail, Holy Blood. The supposed connection between this obscure French political movement and the Templar Knights. It was so convoluted as to be improbable, and I'm like, somebody wrote this piece of trash for all those conspiracy nuts, and this all started. The first conspiracy book I ever read was the Lincoln Conspiracy.
Well, that was a conspiracy. That was a very real conspiracy. The thing is, it begins at a house in what is now Chinatown that was owned by a woman from Maryland. She was a Confederate sympathizer. What was her name? They hanged her. Even though the Supreme Court issued an order saying, do not hang this woman, they hanged her just the same.
Yeah, she was the first woman to be judicially hanged in the United States.
And it was a huge miscarriage of justice.
Mary Surratt.
Mary Surratt, precisely. And she was from Clinton, Maryland. And she had a rooming house in Washington, D.C. It is now at least on the bottom floor, occupied by the Walk and Roll restaurant in Chinatown. Pretty good eats. I'm sorry. I think this is the Peking duck hangs in the window, you know, ready to go.
You're talking about a place that really
does it. Yes. And I love D.C.'s Chinatown. I wonder if I'll ever get back. But the thing is, the people who were staying at Mary Surratt's house in D.C. were indeed a part of a conspiracy, but the conspiracy that was hatched in Mary Surratt's house, if I'm recalling my history correctly, was not to assassinate Abraham Lincoln. They were going to kidnap him and hold him for ransom to get some sort of settlement for the Confederacy. Only later, after they were gone from Mary Surratt's boarding house, did they hatch the plan to go ahead and commit Ralph's, it really is the Walk and Roll restaurant. And Ralph's earlier said, yay, Roger, for Roger meeting Matt's challenge. Thank you. Thank you. The walk and roll, I promise. But after they had left the Surratt house, they decided they were just going to strike a blow, and they and one was to kill Lincoln, another was to kill Seward, another was to kill Stanton. Stanton.
He was the Secretary of War.
Right.
Stanton was the Secretary of War.
Right, and they did kill Lincoln. They got very damn close to killing Seward.
Sent to kill Johnson as well.
And the ones, Johnson and Stanton, were utterly unsuccessful. So that gives you some idea.
And being of melodramatic bent,
Booth
allegedly leaped from the stage and landed on his.
Yeah, he leaped. And that's a hell of a jump too. I've been in Ford's Theater. He leapt from the box, landed on the stage, broke his freaking leg because he was an idiot. And yelled the motto that is on the Virginia flag to this day, Sic Semper Tyrannis, so always with tyrants, or so always for tyrants. It depends on
how. Why is it they always keep hiring tyrants, though? I mean, Lumpy is not exactly what I'd call a stable influence in the government there.
But the thing is, I mean, Lincoln was a real conspiracy. Garfield, no conspiracy there. McKinley, no conspiracy there. And then you get to Kennedy.
We don't get to a real presidential conspiracy until Kennedy. And then there's some questions about that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I've been to Dealey Plaza as a kid, and it's funny, my right-wing Republican father got into politics because of John Kennedy being the first Catholic president. And my dad was a teenager when Kennedy was elected. He was Catholic, and Kennedy's message of public service really spoke to my dad. You talk to my dad about Kennedy now, and it's almost in reverential tones. I mean, it didn't stop him from voting for Nixon or supporting Reagan, somebody who would have made John Kennedy spin in his grave and probably did. But, the reason my dad got involved in politics was because of John Kennedy. And you don't have too many figures like that. I mean, the closest I think we got to that kind of influence, and it remains to be seen how many of those people get involved in local and state and federal politics, was the groundswell under Obama when he was first elected.
Right, and we will not be here, we will likely not be here to find out the results of that. But, Bill, there's a picture of Bill Clinton as a teenager, I think it was Boys State, shaking hands with John Kennedy, yeah. And he said that was the moment when he knew he wanted to get into politics. Well,
Boys Nation, that's what it was.
Yeah, Boys Nation. And I remember riding riding the D.C. Metro for the first time on the night of January 20th, 2009, and being surrounded by families with little sleeping babies in their arms. And those babies who were asleep in their mamas and daddies' arms, get this. They're 12-year-olds now. Whoa.
Oh, good Lord.
They're 12-year-olds now. And we don't know which one of them will eventually say, my mama and daddy took me to see Barack Obama inaugurated as president, and when they told me that growing up, I knew I wanted to do something like him.
Well, I remember the night he was elected, he gave a shout out to a 104-year-old black woman who had never voted in presidential elections before, but voted in his election in 2008 and waited in line for hours, 104 years old. And, you know, y'all don't believe a damn word the media or the Republicans say about, oh, we got this locked up in the bag. You get out there and vote in larger numbers than you did when Obama was elected. That is the only way we say. We have to overwhelm them. We cannot use genteel language. Sorry, Biden. I understand you're a creature of the Senate, but you're now president. You have to put that aside. He's been doing a fairly good job of putting it aside recently.
I'd say you're right.
He's not afraid to call Addison out. He's not afraid to call some of his other former colleagues out. You know, people don't want to give him credit for the things he has done because, well, that might make him look good. Well, that's it. If Nitwit Nero did anything good in his administration, I'm hard put to figure out what it is.
Well, let's see. There was that law that he signed off on that could very well make life a lot harder for him in regard to purloined documents.
Yeah, what
that's
it,
the best I got.
And then he signed it into a felony, a federal felony. Oops.
I mean, that is that. I would absolutely love to see him hoist himself on that very own petard of his. Hey, Dave, I got a roll. I want to see if anybody else wants into the conversation, but it's awfully wonderful talking to you. How is Christine?
Well, she's doing okay. She had somebody that works for her walk into her house on the mound while she was gone. And so now she's getting a security system put into the trailer so that when she's back in Chicago retraining and possibly getting a guide dog, that he won't come in there because he teased her, well, while you're gone, I'll just come over and spend the night. And she's like, oh, no, you're not. See, unfortunately, even if he was joking, there's something about Christine he needs to understand. The woman has no sense of humor. The only joke she ever told was, I do, and then a couple years later, it was, I don't. And that's why she's my ex-wife. It's like I told somebody I met when she asked me to make Christine talk to her. I said I convinced her to marry me once. I just couldn't convince her to stay married to me.
That's really the key to the benefits program.
Yeah, it is. But I'll talk to you again here in a bit. So take care of yourself and give Nimrod a little slack. She did it right. I don't usually disclose our clients, but when they get seventh grade time, if you look at the picture close,
yes, yeah, you'll see she's okay.
She's outstretched on an old number seven, good and proper. So just give her a little slack. Or, no, that's what I told the boys down at the shop. Give her a little slack. Let her hang a little more loosely, yeah. You know.
Let's get a little drape going.
Yeah.
You're wicked. All right, Dave, you're wicked. I just need you to know that. You're wicked.
I'll tell all the folks down at the shop you said hey.
Oh, yeah, Goober says hey. Hey to Goober.
All right.
Hi.
Bye.
Bye. The one and only Dave in the Blind, calling from Tallahassee. And we made remarkable progress this evening so far. Thank you so much for the challenge to Matt in San Francisco. We are down to 1495. And if we could take it down further, we might even be able to reach for a Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle tomorrow. Who knows? If you want to jump into the conversation, you're welcome. Both of the lines are open on the Skype line or on the Stress line. Stress line, of course, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And then, bobkincaidhorn@gmail.com or 304-574-8178. Get you right into the conversation. You know, we've talked about this from time to time, and this is another moment where we... This is another one of those ahead-of-the-curve moments where we've been talking about something for eons and the rest of the world finally catches up. Big props to Stacey Abrams, gubernatorial candidate in Georgia, because she finally said something we've been saying for quite some time here. She said, and I quote, "There is no such thing as a heartbeat at 6 weeks pregnancy." And you know what? She's right. They are electrical impulses. They are not of a beating heart. There's no right ventricle, right auricle, left auricle at 6 weeks. No. And God Almighty, the Republicans are having a shit hemorrhage over it. Stacey Abrams said babies don't have hearts. Oh, Jesus. No, maggots, no. What she said was absolutely correct. She said, "There's no such thing as a heartbeat at 6 weeks. It is a manufactured sound designed to convince people that men have the right to take control of a woman's body." Well, men and the self-hating women who help enable them, you know, like Justice Handmaid. And this really did make the Republicans just have a shit fit. Of course there's a heartbeat. Gotta be a heartbeat. Can't be none. Yeah, there's always been a lottery. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon. Never mind. But she said it, and it has engendered a discussion now. And she went on to say that she believes, she thinks, that a woman's right to reproductive care should extend throughout the pregnancy if the life of the mother is in danger. If a doctor says, there's nothing we can do, this baby is going to die as soon as it's born, in agony, of course abortion services should be available. Of course. Or, well, this baby didn't form upright, and if you try to have it, you're going to die. And the baby's going to die, too. Oh, for God's sakes, for those of... No spoilers, but for those of you who have watched House of the Dragon so far, a medieval, otherworldly attempt at a cesarean section. Well, the whole Game of Thrones franchise goes for shock value. But that's a heartbreaking scene. And oh, God, the sad dragon. Oh! But Stacey Abrams is right. Those are... And still, there's a statement that's missing. And that is that even if the wingnuts were correct, and there's a heartbeat from a heart, the fundamental processes that make a human being, take place in the brain. You know, I think some Asian, ancient Asian wisdom said that the soul or whatever was situated in the liver. Maybe the fetus fetishists need a liver bill. Oh, Lord, I tell you what, I stopped by Swiftwater General Store earlier today, and the chef there for the Thursday special had done French fried chicken livers and sautéed onions. Whoa! Sorry, hillbilly girl, like me some chicken livers. Where did that come into the conversation? Stop it! But... Stacey Abrams is correct and at least had the courage to say so. There is no heart, and what's more, there's also the most fundamental element. Forced birth is evil. Let's say it a little louder for the people in the back. Forced birth is evil. Forced birth destroys the autonomy of someone who is pregnant. Well, oopsie, you got pregnant. Well, the state controls your body here on out. You know, just like the dissent in Dobbs says, from the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. But God Almighty, and see what really pissed him off is that the Washington Post fact checker said, for what it's worth, fetal heartbeat is a misnomer. The ultrasound picks up electrical activity generated by an embryo. The so-called heartbeat sound you hear is created by the ultrasound. Not until 10 weeks can the opening and closing of cardiac valves be detected by a Doppler machine. Doppler being radar and everything. And the grunting and the barking and the hooting could be heard at Elon Musk's beach house on Mars. Dr. Nisha Verma, interviewed by NPR and identified by Fox News TV Radio Rwanda as a self-identified abortion provider, said the flickering that we're seeing on the ultrasound that early in the development of the pregnancy is actually electrical activity, and the sound that you hear is actually manufactured by the machine. Never mind. It won't slow them down. Not a bit. Because they're not interested in facts. Like I said, it won't affect them one iota because they're not interested in facts. They are interested in theocracy. They are interested in controlling human bodies. And controlling human bodies beyond those of pregnant people. This is just the starting place. Controlling the... Well, I mean, look at how they think about my community. You know, some of the treatments for prostate troubles, cancer, involve doses of the same sorts of hormones I'm taking. Well, if they decide they hate the transes enough, they'll make that impossible too. Because maybe, you know, maybe it's not really, maybe you're secretly, well, never mind. They are a wild-eyed theocratic bunch, no less than, what was his name? Ibrahim Raisi, the butcher of Tehran. Yeah, same, same. And this just beats the daylights out of me. Did you know that on the November ballot, slavery is actually on the ballot in 2022 in Alabama, Louisiana, Oregon, Tennessee, and Vermont? Those five states will vote on whether to fully abolish slavery. What it relates to is the 13th Amendment and that little clause that allows involuntary servitude for people convicted of crimes. Because people in prisons are actually slaves in this country. The ACLU says that there are 1.2 million Americans incarcerated. Two-thirds of that 1.2 million are placed into forced labor. And so these five states have decided whether they're going to strike down involuntary prison labor. Well, maybe Oregon will probably get it right. Vermont will probably get it right. I'm a little less sanguine about Louisiana, Tennessee, and, well, of course, Alabama. Wait, you mean we still got slavery? Oh, hot damn! Man, we snuck one through. Oh. It is, of course, a horror. But it's worth mentioning. It'll be curious to see how it plays out in November. And by the way, I said earlier we would have a little something-something about Miss Lindsay. Well, yeah, Randy Radar. When a fertilized egg does not attach to the uterine wall, it eventually... Well, it will come out, and that is a spontaneous abortion, which has been called by more benighted people a miscarriage. And that's what is so terrifying about these new theocratic abortion laws, is that they will, in fact, they have the potential to criminalize a bad period. And in fact, there's a couple of dudes who have designs on women's bodies. I wish I was kidding. I am not. This is deeply disturbing. I'm looking for the story now. I think it comes out of, oh goodness me, Louisiana Stan. There they are. Yeah. Oil City, Louisiana is home to a radical right-wing legislator and a Baptist gospel sharp. They promoted a bill that says that a person who is pregnant can face murder charges even if they were raped or doctors say that the procedure was needed to save their very lives. The women can be prosecuted for murder. In a case of in vitro fertilization, no, really, they like babies, but not baby, no, no. A doctor who performs in vitro fertilization can be prosecuted for murder because not all the fertilized embryos, not all the fertilized eggs get used, and some are destroyed. Representing Danny McCormick of Oil City, Louisiana, said, "The taking of a life is murder, and it is illegal." And Brian Gunter, who talked McCormick into introducing the bill, said, "No compromise, no more waiting." Four women spoke out against the bill during the committee hearing. The men folk were not impressed. Melissa Flournoy runs a group called 10,000 Women Louisiana. She used to be a member of the Louisiana House. She said, "We need to take a deep breath," and pointed out exactly what a horror this would create. Punishes only women, puts no onus on men whatsoever. And they want to... Well, hello, Sox. Stand by. Socrates, the philosopher cat, came for a visit. Now, it's funny how men have no responsibility in any of this. And they are hell-bent, and this will get legs because it will be supported by fetus fetishists of America, or whatever they call themselves. And it'll start in Louisiana, and it'll spread like the deadly virus that it is. But I didn't mean to start out talking about that. I actually had Precious Lindsay in mind. Yes. Precious Lindsay, somehow or another, who, I don't even think he's on the ballot this year, is he? No. Precious Lindsay declared day before yesterday that abortion is not a state's rights issue. And, so this is a human rights issue, so no matter what California, Maryland will do, I'm going to advocate a national minimum standard. Oh. Go brush your hair, Lindsay. And it didn't sit well with folks that are Republicans that are desperately trying to run away from Dobbs now. John Thune, South Dakota, the number two Republican in the Senate, said,
Well, it's not obviously an issue right now. That as you look at the whole array of issues that this campaign is going to be around, I think it's an issue one way or another you're going to respond to, because Democrats are certainly going to make it an issue. Now, if you have the right response and a response that kind of fits the majority of where your constituents are, you can at least turn it into an even fight, because he recognizes that north of 80% of America are like, y'all fucked up. And the guy who's running to try to replace Michael Bennett in Colorado, one Joe O'Day, who purports to be pro-choice and a Republican, Joe O'Day was invited to the Senate Republicans' weekly luncheon at the Capitol. Don't know if there was any bean soup involved. He got rather noisy about Miss Lindsay's little old national abortion ban. He supports abortions up to 5 months. And so, a lot of them are, hey, Lindsay, shut up. Really, shut up. Mitch McConnell. Now, most of the members of my conference prefer that this be dealt with at the state level.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Lindsay is totally safe. Thank you, Ralph, serving as the Hornet Ad Hoc Research Department. Lindsay got reelected in 2020, and Ralph says, he's younger than I am, so he's good till 2026. Lindsay, ixnay on the anbay. I'm trying to make people think that we actually think that people have rights. God damn it. There were not a bunch of theocratic fascists. Oh, and up in Ohio, looks like there won't be any debates between incumbent Governor Mike DeWino and his Democratic opponent for governor. No. He said, Ohioans already know me, and they know my position, so I've been out there a lot, and nobody needs to see me debate somebody who can actually stand up to me. He's facing a Democratic nominee. By the name of Nan Whaley. She used to be the mayor of Dayton. And there's not going to be a debate between Tim Ryan and J.D. Hillbilly, J.D. Fake Hillbilly. All because the Republican Party of Ohio says, it ain't fair! Because the moderator... not even the moderator, but the executive director of the debate group is a Democrat. And
she's got a long history of anti-Republican rhetoric and activism.
She hasn't said a word about Democrats or Republicans since she took a job with the committee, the Ohio Debate Commission. And this is where it gets kind of sad and pathetic. Because DeWino and Fake Hillbilly declined to participate, the Ohio Debate Commission said they will not have any empty chair debates, which they damned well should. Tim Ryan accepted their invitation. So did Nan Whaley. And they ought to go forward and allow the candidates to speak to the people of Ohio. But because DeWino, 75 years old, and the fake hillbilly, who apparently doesn't like those kind of people, decided to pout, the people of the Buckeye State will be deprived of the opportunity to hear them. Chicken shits. That's the word we're looking for here. Chicken shits. And what's that, Scott? Scott says, Senator Graham. Now, you know full well, Robin, Lindsay is never not on the ballot of our heart. Well, yes, of course. And speaking of Mitch McConnell, a little bit Addison, the worst thing to ever creep, crawl, slither, or slime its way out of Colbert County, Alabama. Well, he runs a leadership pack, Addison does, and they just pulled all their ads out of Arizona Stan. Because Blake Masters isn't showing a lot of promise. And it wasn't just a little bit. The Senate Leadership Fund pulled $9.6 million of advertising in Arizona Stan. The article in Axios noted, the cancellations mean that the GOP's leading super PAC won't be spending any money in Arizona, one of the most closely watched Senate races in the country. Its allied nonprofit arm spent several millions in the state on issue ads over the summer. Flapping the breeze, Blake Masters. Flapping the breeze. Maybe it's one of those... candidate quality issues that he was so thoroughly excoriated for admitting. Oh, and this is kind of a follow-up. And at first... Yeah, headline writing can be a tricky business. Woman who falsely accused Blackbird watcher loses lawsuit against ex-employer. What? No, reread it. Woman who falsely accused Blackbird watcher loses lawsuit against ex-employer. This is that the ongoing saga of the Karen in Central Park, who said that she was threatened, told the cops she was threatened by a dude who was bird watching in Central Park. And she was promptly proven to be a liar. And then her employer, Franklin Templeton, gave her the heave-ho. And she sued them and accused them of illegally firing her and making her look like a racist. Well, I don't think Franklin Templeton had anything to do with making her look like a racist. Oh, no. U.S. District Judge Ronnie Abrams in Manhattan said, no, Amy Cooper, you were not defamed when Franklin Templeton and the chief executive Jenny Johnson said they don't tolerate racism. And then the judge, sort of countersinking the nail, said, yeah, and you also failed to prove that you were fired in May 2020 because of your race or your gender. She had been an insurance portfolio manager when, back on May the 25th of 2020, there was video showing her getting all worked up and Karenized when she went after a bird watcher by the name of Christian Cooper, who was black. She called the police and said, "There's an African-American man threatening my life," because Christian Cooper asked her to put her dog on the leash, like the rules say. And it all went down the same day that the Minneapolis police murdered George Floyd. Well, gosh. Thing is, she was initially charged with filing a false police report. But, of course, the cops dropped the Manhattan DA's office, dropped the charge 7 months later because she completed therapy that included instruction on not using racial bias. Well, at least she lost this lawsuit. I'm sure she'll go and be an insurance portfolio manager somewhere else. Well, thank you. We are now down to 1465? Thank you to an anonymous friend. A contribution for someone who would like to be supporting the program but can't at this time. Thank you. That's lovely. Thank you. No, Ron, I have neither seen the new Quantum Leap. I want to. And I haven't seen She-Hulk yet either. We're sort of consumed with House of the Dragon and Lord of the Rings. But I do. I want to see the new Quantum Leap. I hope... Is it good? Please tell me it's good. I love the original Quantum Leap. I really did. All right, a little bit of time left in the program. Back to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program. Ow!
It's really fine, Shorty.
Hey, Shorty, how are you, dear?
How you doing? I don't know. Did you read my past email to find out what happened to me?
Yeah, I saw it. Jesus, are you okay?
Yeah. So, it's a broken shoulder.
You got hit by a car?
For all you guys don't know, I was crossing the street all over a neighbor's where the old house was at. And I went to get some food. And my friend of mine was going to take me fishing that weekend because my birthday was on the 11th, all right? I'm talking on purpose, too, so just in case they treat me like the N-word on the street, you can hear the paramedics when they move me to the next facility, okay? They should be on their way up. So I go across the street, and, you know, I see the car, you know, like waiting. Both of us have the right of way, right? And so I'm walking across the street almost to the center, and he's still sitting at the light, like he didn't pull up the turn. And next thing I knew, I'm in the air, and I was hearing, "Oh, hell no, he didn't see her. Damn, that's high." And then I felt a boom boom, which means I came down on the car, then I slid off the car and went to the ground. And he gets out the car and looks at me on his face, but I know it's the same look I had on my face. And I would both say, "What's your name?" You know, and he told me his name. I told him mine. And then he said, can you stand? Can you get up?" And God hit me on the back of the head and just said, "Don't you even open your mouth," you know. So then that was that. And did I tell you that I get to the video part in the text, the email and everything? You remember that part?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so all that was there before we even drove off. So because of my status and everything, you can't just put my name in anywhere without people going, "What the hell? Where's she at? What's she doing?" So California got involved, and so the Department of Veterans Affairs was like, "Wait a minute now. Let's see what we got going on here." And so then they've been working with the Veterans Administration, and so they put a hard thing on my shoulder, whatever, and now the VA has got someone to get me out of here to take me to, you know, it's called convalescent home, right? But they told me it's a skilled nursing facility. So that's where I'm on my way to. Yep.
And what kind of time frame?
Well, get this. I'm so glad you asked, because they told me that when I get there, I'll have a case. My caseworker will be there, and a veterans social worker will be there. And get this. Get this part. And that the social worker will come see me once a month. So I'm like, okay, so this first time I've laughed. I love you. So I guess it's going to be more than a month, huh? Or two or three. And I'm so happy, Robin, that I did not have my brace on. I didn't have my teeth or nothing. Nothing. I was just running to the store, and I was going to get a little charger to take, you know, to go fishing, because it was like, you know, my treatment. I had a transannual whatever. I think I sent you the video of what they wanted to do. They went up in there and collected something and yada yada. So, you know, I was like, okay, all right, guys, this is too much for me. And the lady was like, her daughter has cancer and she's doing great. You know, she's like not even fifth grade or whatever. And told me her dad was going to take her fishing and I can go too. So that's what we're going to do. So that's a broken heart right there. You know, with her, a broken heart and a broken shoulder. Ha ha. So I was just crossing the street, and then body's safe. Will anything happen on the way somewhere? So I guess it's maybe four. I don't know. But it's broken. So, yupper. Sorry, guys. You okay? Are you breathing?
I'm good.
Are you breathing?
I'm breathing.
Okay. So that's that. I know, right? But the thing about it, while I was up in the air, I was like, I got hit by a car. I knew not to try to brace or do anything, to just go with the whatever. I just went plop on the car, and then and get this, when I'm looking up, the guy whose mom used to run this store, he was across the street, and I'm telling the cop, my brother, right? And so he's like, oh, and he's like, I looked up at him, and then there's like a Bell's Monson shop there, and then a kid's, what do you call it, art place, and then a store. And I'm in between the kid's art place and the store. Well, I was right on the corner of the street, so I got knocked about two stores down. So I'm like, I remember that, you know, because he called me. So, yeah. So I'm not ouching as bad as I was, but man, I did not know what shoulders were like. So.
Oh, no, it can be brutal. It can be brutal.
Yeah.
Do they have you immobilized and stuff right now, the shoulders, so it's not, you know?
They put a hard thing on it now so that, yes, I'm supposed to have bent my elbow, but shoot, uh-uh. I told him, I said, it feels like whenever I put my arm down, something's going, like it's rubbing, like it's something rubbing. And it's a broken shoulder. I'm like, I'm wondering if you know, when they found out, you know, who I was and all this kind of stuff, and I said, call these people, they probably went, oh, we're not going to operate. So they kept telling me, we're not going to operate. Calls coming in from the state of California and so-and-so and fucking people over, you know, the waters and everything, asking how I'm doing. And then the Veteran Administration called us and pretty much said, you're one of theirs. And I'm like, they didn't say that. You know, I know they didn't say that, you know, right? And so then when I get the doctors, you know, and their whole team of, you know, of students come by, it's like every day, and it's like, and this person is a so-and-so up at this, and then they did this and then that. I'm like, well, maybe the VA did act stupid and said, you be careful with her. And I'm like, come on. You know, but so they kept saying, we're not doing surgery. And so one thing I think I did mess up on was when they said to me, they said, we're going to give you blood thinner, right?
Well, Jude wants to know how you were treated at the scene of the accident.
It was like people who know me that knows I come by because of the house I was working on. Here's the important you mentioned it, because I'm laying down and I'm telling the guy, don't lift me up because I'm going to crap my pants, but I just survived in my last treatment, right? And he's talking and talking and talking. We got to get you out of the street. It's the fireman. So when I get in the car, I'm thinking there's a commotion between all of us. Everybody was nice, but I'm thinking there's a commotion. And when the guy in the fire department asked me, it was, starts talking about stuff, you know, and saying, well, this is even reporting to somebody else. I'm sorry about how I sound. It's just that I know I'll crap my pants because I have no bowel control because I don't have none. And he goes, oh, I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to the paramedic. He got there 10 minutes before we did. And I'm trying to get him to help you help me off the street. Help me get me off the street. And he said, I'll get to her in a minute. And I said to myself, I swore I heard, I knew I heard him say that, but the guy was up in my face. I'm like, stop trying to cut stuff. Don't cut my Air Force jacket. No, don't cut, you know. And he's like, look, the guy got you out here, but he wasn't, my thing back, he wasn't really looking at me when he said that. You got to get her out of the street. So the paramedics were pretty much the assholes, so the firemen got there after that. And so they were, I remember him talking to the guy and getting his name, and he's like, this group, I hit her. And he pretty much didn't give me, he didn't even turn around and look at me. But the firemen were okay, and the cops were okay. Because I'm in the car, and I'm like, you know, he's talking to the paramedic. He goes, I'm so sorry, ma'am. I wasn't talking about you. I was just reporting to my boss how the paramedic was acting. I'm like, look, man, you got me doing this all by myself. You know, and cause it was just him and somebody was short because of the fires or whatever, right? And so he says, you know, I got to get her up, you know. And he was telling his boss, I'm overhearing him, right, Robin? Telling somebody else, and I'm thinking he's talking about our conversation. So he was ventilating about how the paramedic was treating me, you know, to answer her question. And so I go, well, I thought you were talking to me. And then the cop says, oh, yeah, you were up in the air. Oh, he didn't see you. I'm like, what is going on? Because I can hear the sounds all over again. He goes, I got a video right here. I'm like, what? What do you mean? He goes, yeah, the guy, because there's one of those medical people. And then there's a couple of restaurants, and when they see me, when they see my jacket, I always just salute little kids, so now their parents salute. So they just know the Sergeant Air Force, you know, right? So I guess they just came out with their videos and gave it right to the cops. And so he's like, oh, he didn't see you, right? And so I'm like, okay, wow, that's creepy. But I'm like, thank you, Jesus. And then I'm like, wait a minute, hey. And then the guy says, we got to go. I'll talk to you later. He goes, did she know that guy? And I'm like, who are you talking about? And I don't want to mention the guy's name on the radio. And I said his name. I said, you mean that guy? He goes, no, I'm not talking to him. I said, what do you mean? He goes, it looks like she knew him. Did he know her or what? And I'm like, man, wow, that's a different angle. Like that. And I'm like, what? He goes, oh, no, it's another video. It's another video. And the cop goes, can I? That's for me. He goes, then that's the thing for me. So there was at least three videos there. And so I'm like, I can't own up, Robin. I can't say somebody intentionally did. I can't do that. I'm not going to leave on that. I can't say the guy did. And my brother, my oldest brother, the one I was talking about, was a Panther and got out of jail, yada, yada, when I was facing Japan. He says he did on the internet. And that week there were 40 accidents in 7 days. In the city of Los Angeles. Now, my birthday was the 11th, and this happened was a Sunday. So this happened on Wednesday. I don't want to give too much detail just in case it was, you know. But whatever day of the week it was, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever it was. So, and he looked it up, like, maybe over the weekend. And he goes, you know, he says, you're lucky, you know, he's a pastor. You're lucky God, you know. Cause I said, yeah, thank you, Jesus. And he goes, because a lot of them are dead. And he said, there's several of them were drunk drivers, but not a lot. He said, the majority of them were distracted drivers.
Not at all surprising.
Said, oh, my God.
Well, Shorty, I'm glad to hear from you. We are right out of time. I'm glad you called in. I'm glad to know you're getting better. That. Yeah. Stay in touch.
I'm okay, guys. So no matter what they say, thank you for listening. Jude, thank you. They treated me well. So I guess whenever I'm able to talk to you guys again, I'll let you know.
Okay.
So sorry you guys had to hear it like that.
No, shoot me an email. Just let me know you're okay, all right?
Okay. I love you guys. Smooch his horn.
All right. You take care. We love you, Shorty. Be good, girl.
Thank you. Bye.
And we round out the program. God. Shorty's been through the ringer. Glad she's as okay as she is. So that's the end of the program. And we will see what Friday on the Front Porch brings tomorrow. By the way, I found out during the course of the program, I will not be on the road next Friday either. So neither Thursday nor Friday will be interrupted programming. So everything should be groovy all the way up to mark your calendars or whatnot. I'll be getting out of here on, I think, October the 6th. And I'll be back probably in, maybe the 5th. I don't know. But I'll be back in time for, very likely back in time for Moran Monday the 10th. So, and thank you, Ralph. Ralph said hugs to Shorty. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. This program wouldn't exist without your help. Thank you to our a la carte contributors this evening. Thank you so very much. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks. Earlier in the evening, excuse me, thank you to Sparky. I'm sorry I missed your message, Sparky, because when you leave, the message disappears. I kind of hated about that platform. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way in a little under an hour, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Remember, the best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Keep wearing your mask when you're out among the great maggot unvaccinated. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Keep your social distance 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes burbling down the sidewalk, they do too have heartbeat. Well, avoid that fetish fetishist like the plague, because they are. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.